You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.
It's going to be a football game tonight now.
No doubt.
It's going to be a football game.
Here.
Okay.
I've been here
before. All right, let's go, baby. Hey.
Play clock at 5. Pass is intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
And the Ohio State Buckeyes are the first national champions of the playoff era.
Ladies and gentlemen, football to football.
Your host, Sean Garmer, Gary Vaughn, and Randy Isbell.
Hello and welcome to another Football to Football. And yes, this is the NFL Divisional Round Recap Edition, and we'll be talking about a few things like Doug Peterson officially getting hired, even though Gary and I kind of went through that last week. But Randy wasn't here, and he is here today, so we could probably go through some of those again. But hey, Randy, you know, you missed the preview. How are you? Are you feeling better?
I'm getting there. I'm coughing a lot. I have my thumb on the cough button on my microphone, but I'm ready to go. And I joined you guys fully in like May or something last year. So out of all those episodes, this is probably going to be the rantiest podcast you've ever had me on.
Sweet. Always make for better ones. Well, Gary, how are you? How'd the weekend go?
Good, you know, probably better than Carson Palmer's thumb, but, you know, still doing okay. I'm a little bit more accurate, I think, than him at the moment, but we're doing good over here, and I'm glad that Randy's feeling better. It's good to have all of us on the show. It's, you know, it just lacks something when all three of us aren't on here, but it's a blast. I can't wait to talk about all the stuff we got to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty much, yeah, I got onto the Making the Murderer and didn't sleep, or Making a Murderer from the Netflix show. I didn't sleep last night until I watched. I wound up falling asleep because, you know, the kid didn't have school because of Martin Luther King today. And, which, you know, I guess I don't have a little in memory of whatever Martin Luther King, but, you know, for all the great things he did for the people. Yeah, so I had to sit there and like kind of doze off while she's watching TV because I was dumb and forgot that she didn't have school today. But, yeah, so let's get into, these games here. The first one kind of went to form once we found out that Brady was going to have all of his weapons back. The score was a little bit closer than what the game sort of really was, as far as, you know, the Patriots kind of getting to do a little bit too much of what they wanted, I think. But what did you see here, Randy?
Yeah, it's kind of exactly what you said. As once you knew Edelman was going to be in the game, you knew Gronkowski was going to play, it did look pretty bad for Kansas City. And offensively, New England got to do whatever they wanted. Just pure dissection by Tom Brady. I had flashbacks to the first Patriots-Jets game where the Patriots just said, we don't even need a running game. We're just going to let Tom Brady throw it, and he's going to get exactly what he needed, and he complete dissection. And as far as the Chiefs go, I really do feel like they had a chance in this game. But their problem was they couldn't convert long drives into touchdowns. Like, you go back and look at how this game starts. You have Tom Brady going out 11 plays, I think all 11 plays were passes for 80 yards, and he scores a touchdown. Then Kansas City gets the ball. They go on a 17-play drive. They run off over 8.5 minutes, and they end up with 3 points. And it was like at that point where I went, yeah, my Super Bowl prediction is out the window because Kansas City just doesn't – you have to take advantage of opportunities against New England, and they never did.
Gary?
Yeah, I mean, Randy said pretty much all of it because, let's be honest, the Kansas City put up a little bit of a fight, but not much. Their defense was not the defense we've seen all year. Gronkowski is hard to deal with alone, but when you got Edelman to deal with as well, I mean, it is a nightmare for most teams. That's what it became for Kansas City. I think it's kind of funny that Belichick, you know, he probably said this in sly. He probably did a kind of a what Parcells used to do and said, oh, this team is going to be really tough. We have no answer. But even though he kind of thought, oh, we got an answer. We're just not letting them know. And that's what I felt about this game. It just seemed like they did have all the answers, and they were ready to come in here and take on this Kansas City team that had been pretty impressive all year long. So
did you feel like – I know we talked about it, that the Chiefs had to do this and that, whatever, but – did you feel going in once you knew who was playing that the Chiefs had a shot still? Or did you feel it was just like a matter of time?
As soon as you hear Edelman's playing, I was very concerned. That's a big red flag that popped up because Edelman, it just seems to be magic right now with Brady, and he has for a while now. And I think that's what the Patriots really lacked. Even with Amendola, I mean, Amendola did an okay job, but he wasn't Edelman. And Edelman just is a special player. And so that really affects Tom Brady's game. That affects the entire team. So I think that alone helped. And, you know, Gronkowski's Gronkowski. He's going to always get his, and Tom Brady's going to find him. But when you got the 1-2 punch, they're hard to stop. I think Kansas City had a shot, though.
That was going to be my next question for you there, Gary. Who is more important then, Edelman or Gronk?
That's tough because Edelman was a big deal. I think that's why they did have some struggles on offense. Maybe you could say Edelman. It's hard not to go with Gronkowski, though. I mean, this guy is a special player. I mean, he's honestly surefire Hall of Famer already. And yeah, if you ask me, this guy is just going to break every record out there probably.
Yeah, I think he already has the record for touchdowns, right? Yeah, or if not, he's really, really close.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if he decides he wants to play for a long time, I mean, Tony Gonzalez, sorry, you're going to be in second place. So I think Gronkowski is definitely the big player here that you got to say this is the guy. But, man, Edelman does make a difference when it comes to, you know, spreading the ball around and giving the Patriots a chance to be, you know, more than just one guy, especially when it comes to receiving the ball.
I actually kind of have to disagree with you. I mean, I'm the same way where I think they're both huge pieces for this offense. But, I mean, yes, Gronkowski makes those big plays for you, and he's just a touchdown machine. But Edelman just seems to be able – is like the glue that holds everything together right now for New England. And I remember hearing a stat, you know, as the regular season had ended and we're getting ready for all these games and stuff where they were still unsure Edelman was going to play or not, and they went back and looked. And with Edelman, you know, on the field, the Patriots were averaging something like 6.8 yards per play, which was first in the league. But you take the times that he was injured and not available for the Patriots, and they were averaging like 4.7 yards a play, which would have been worst in the league. So, I mean, it's crazy to think that one player could do that much difference, but I mean, it's tough to argue that number where, I mean, with them on the field, they're the best offense in the league. Without them, they were technically the worst. So, I mean, I kind of have to go Edelman there.
Yeah, and I definitely, you know, I could definitely understand that. And the statistics, you know, they don't lie. You know, I just it's hard for me just because Gronk is a big name. And, of course, you know, I wonder, you know, without Gronkowski for the amount of time that Edelman was out, we switch roles. Edelman plays all those games and Gronkowski doesn't. Do you think that Scott Chandler would have done just good enough job and help that offense? Edelman really is the glue.
I'll say that, you know, I agree with you that Edelman does make a lot of things happen. But, you know, there's also other factors in there, too. Edelman, there's a lot of – if you got to look at it where Edelman's down, but you also had Deion Lewis be down. If Deion Lewis is around and you have Gronk, I think it's not it, – the blow is lessened a bit. It's a bigger blow because when you have everybody down, even Amendola, and all you had was Gronk, even when you know the ball is going to Gronk, He was still catching passes. He was still making things happen. I just think that every time, and even Bill Belichick has said it himself, when Belichick, when your coach, who is one of the greatest coaches to ever coach this game, says, we didn't win a Super Bowl because Gronk was not playing or Gronk was injured, I think that tells you everything you need to know about who is the most important player not named Tom Brady on that offense. So, but, I mean, Edelman is like a 1A. You know, so at least right now, there was other times where Edelman wasn't the player he is right now, you know, and you still had Welker there, I think, for one of the Super Bowls with him. So,
to what Randy's saying here, this is the Welker. This is the new version of Welker, what he was to Tom Brady. And you saw how important he was. I mean, you look back at those, you know, early Super Bowls for Tom Brady. Sure, he depended on Falk. He depended on a lot of those other guys around him. But really, Welker was that glue piece. And I think all these players are important. But you know, I think there's a good argument here, and I like this. It's a good debate because really, who is more important? It's hard to tell.
Yeah. So you know, they had this decision here to go for. You know, you could say that Andy Reid didn't do the greatest job of managing the clock there at the end. No. There was honestly times where I'm sitting here going, why are you letting about 30 seconds come off the clock here, 40 seconds? That's an entire play that you're allowing to run here. And that's another play that when Edelman catches that tip pass and gets a first down, you know, you have the ability to get there and – And also, I think that was a dumb call to go for the onside kick when you had the three timeouts. Kick it all the way down the field, and if you make them punt, you have a better shot at getting it at the 50 or something like that. But, I mean, what did you guys think about? I just thought Andy Reid was not managing the game well there at the end. Obviously, some of that goes to Alex Smith, too. But
yeah, this is the thing that absolutely drove me insane. On Saturday was, listen, New England was the far superior team. They deserved to win this game. At this point, they're up 14. But to watch Kansas City with like 6 minutes to go in a game just act like they're playing in the second quarter and have no sense of urgency at all. The stats I keep hearing this morning were a 16-play drive is what Kansas City used to get that touchdown to get within seven. Out of those 16 plays, 8 of them took more than 25 seconds to go off. You're down 14 with 6 minutes to go. What are you doing? Mm-hmm. So at that point, if you just speed it up even a little bit, you had all three of those timeouts. Maybe you score before the 2-minute warning even, which gives you that extra timeout. Then you definitely can kick it off and hope your defense can get a key stop and give yourself enough time to do anything. I'm with you, Sean. I think they felt the onside kick was just a sense of desperation because they needed the one stop. So they figured we'll take our chances on the onside kick other than stopping Tom Brady once, which they hadn't really been able to do. But still, I think you kick it off there with your three timeouts just to give yourself better field position if you were able to get the three and out.
Yeah, I'm right there with you guys. And, you know, to me, an onside kick, it needs to be desperation. But desperation is, you know, I got 50 seconds left. If I can get the ball back, I still have a shot here. Not when you've got enough time to call timeouts. Not enough time when you can actually, you know, try to stop a offense that's potentially dangerous. And, you know, they hadn't stopped Tom Brady all game. But, I mean, really, I mean, your defense may come up with something. Give them a chance. Don't just, you know, risk it all on one play. And that's
and
what they kind of did.
It took them so long, too, on that touchdown, that last touchdown, to get in the end zone. It was like, okay, what are you doing? Get to the line. You guys are just letting stuff, you know, we're continuing to let the time go by. Like, who cares? It's under 2 minutes. You're running the ball for one thing. Okay, if you know you're going to try to run the ball, you got to get up to the line and come on. Like, you can't just wait around. Like, you've got, you know, like Randy said, just 4 or 5 minutes, you know.
Sean, did you feel like you're watching a Cowboys game again? Because we have to deal with this all the time. We watch them slowly walk up to the line, look around. You're like, dude, you got 39 seconds left, and you're only at the other team's 40. Come on, move it. and they're just looking around, strolling around, you know, and that's what I felt like watching this Kansas City team. It's like, good God, what are they waiting for?
Yeah, I don't know. Andy Reid just must have been sleeping, not paying attention to the clock. I don't know. But either way, New England moves on. You know, honestly, I don't know, at least until they get to the Super Bowl, that I really have any concerns for them. But do you have any concerns for the Patriots right now?
No, I mean, this is they're showing that this is just another postseason for New England. People are starting to get healthy again. They're starting to be dangerous. They're going to go up against a Denver team who we'll talk about later that just doesn't look like they're in true form right now. I mean, Peyton Manning in his first time back was okay, but the receivers were dropping everything. And listen, it's going to be another Brady Manning bowl, and Brady seems to dominate that lately. So there's not a lot of concern for me with New England.
Yeah, I mean, the only concern you're ever going to have, and it's yet to be seen, the Broncos were not impressive this last game. We'll talk about it like Randy said, but if they could find a way to get to Brady, that's the one solid chance that they have. That's going to be the chance. I mean, let's be honest, the Broncos, I mean, statistically probably still, I haven't looked at stats today, but statistically they've been a really good defense, probably the best defense in the league. They've, you know, just really taken care of business when it comes to that side of the ball. That's their best option against Tom Brady. Other than that, I mean, I think the Patriots are going to fare okay just because of, well, the injuries are healing up. Everybody's kind of getting back in order.
Yeah, true. So I think we can, before we move on, we did talk about this on the Thursday show, Gary, but it's officially now been done. Doug Peterson, the head coach, the Chiefs offensive coordinator, now the head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles, and coming along with him is the offensive coordinator for the San Diego Chargers, Frank Reich, or he was until they hired Ken Wisenhunt. So Frank Reich was out of a job. It looks like he's going to come with him. Of course, he helped the Chargers still have one of the highest-ranked offenses in the league as well. And then, you know, Peterson's coming from having, I think, what, 2 or 3 years of Alex Smith being great, and, you know, Jamal Charles had that really great year last year. So you're looking at a tandem, you know, on the offensive side, which is what you could say the Eagles are lacking. But this is also coming in from an Andy Reid system, Randy, where they had this before they brought in Chip Kelly. What do you think that says about the Eagles? Do you think they have a little remorse of letting go?
To me, it basically says that the Eagles went, oops. We got caught up on this. The genius that is Chip Kelly, and, you know, we got rid of the whole Andy Reid regime that has been here for years, and we tried this something new. The something new didn't work. Go back to the old. Go back to the old. We can't get Andy Reid. Who is the second guy? Peterson? Him. Give him the money. We don't care. Let's go back to the way it was when we were actually making NFC Championship games and being mad about it.
Yeah, and we talked about this last week, Sean, and I reiterate the whole thing I said. It's about familiarity, but is that familiarity going to work? We don't know. I mean, that was a different time, different players, and, you know, they'll have to kind of reconfigure this roster to get back to what they had. I mean, they have some of the pieces in place, but not all those pieces are what they had when it comes to guys. You know, Donovan McNabb did great in that system, but, I mean, do you have a quarterback on this team that, you know, is going to do that?
That's what I was going to ask is, do you think Sam Bradford gets replaced already in this offseason?
You know, if they have a better option out there, I'm sure they'll definitely explore it, because Sam Bradford has not impressed them now. Once again, we're not in the offseason. I have not looked at Sam Bradford's contract, if he's up, if he's close to being up, where their losses salary cap-wise. I think that you could see a chance of them finding somebody that was similar to what they wanted in that system. But, you know, I don't know. You never say never. They may be interested in Sam Bradford. Maybe they think they can fix him.
What do you think, Randy?
Yeah, I'm kind of with Gary where, I mean, it's tough to get into Peterson's head. I mean, different coaches like different styles of quarterbacks. I mean, if you look at the way Peterson is with Kansas City, you know, with Alex Smith, can he see a little bit of Sam Bradford in him? I don't, but maybe he does. Maybe he wants to try something different. It's really tough to tell right now.
Yeah, I mean, they certainly, you know, you'd figure the number one thing they're going to do is obviously learn to use DeMarco Murray correctly. So they'll probably get their money's worth out of him, unless, you know, he just breaks down because of age or whatever. But you have Ryan Matthews there, too. You know, you have to figure out this core of receivers is decent, but you certainly had better when you had DeSean Jackson, Jerry Maclin on the same team. And they've obviously gone to other teams and been the focal point of their teams, you know. They have, like Gary said, you have key pieces in place. You know, you got to look at the defense, too. So the Eagles got quite a few things to work on here. And since he relates to somebody else that got hired, Mike Mularkey, now the Titans did get a new GM. This also has to do with apparently they don't even know if they're going to have new ownership next year. Mike Mularkey is actually promoted from interim head coach to the actual head coach for this year. We know that they had issues with Marcus Mariota being injured through part of Mularkey's tenure as well. They say it's supposedly some kind of comfort thing with the owners that are there right now. Do you see this as a smart thing, especially, I don't know if Chip Kelly kind of put feelers out there and they said no, and there wasn't really anybody else after him, so they just went with who they had. And then, you know, obviously we have Chip Kelly going to San Francisco. What do you think about this, Randy? Is this a good call for Tennessee?
Yeah, I mean, it's a fine call. I mean, you're not going to go out and get the splash head coaching signing in Tennessee right now. Obviously, that's a team that's rebuilding, and it's going to be a little while. I like that they're showing some patience there by going, okay, obviously, Mularkey, you're our interim guy. The record is not very good. It's tough to find some stability there, but you had a lot of injuries, especially with Mariota and all of that. So, to me, I actually like that they're going, okay, we're not going to rock the boat again. They're not going to pull a Cleveland where, God, this coach, we gave him 1 year with these shitty players and he couldn't turn it around instantly. So we're going to get rid of him and restart again. So maybe they're going to give him a longer leash than some of these other bad teams.
Really quick, Randy, Gary and I kind of already talked about this. Chip Kelly, San Francisco. What does this mean for? Is this automatic Colin Kaepernick now the quarterback again?
Oh, gee. I won't go automatic, but his lifespan there may last a little bit longer.
Well, obviously, you know, when we get to doing the draft stuff, there's probably a couple of QBs that Chip Kelly might look at. If they can realistically get them, he might favor that over Kaepernick, but we shall see. Kaepernick does have a pretty big contract they might want to not have to pay. Hugh Jackson moving into the same division again, this time with the Browns. Marvin Lewis even tried to get him into a, look, I'm probably going to retire soon, you will take over for me role to stay with the Bengals. He didn't go for it. He went with the Browns. He didn't wait for what the Giants were going to do. He went ahead and took the Browns job. Good choice here.
For the Browns, sure. For him, I mean, he was impatient and went with them, and he's going to feel it when they're impatient and get rid of him if things don't turn around in 2 years. That's just what Cleveland does. It's tough for me to see him being able to make them an instant playoff team, and in 2 years they're just going to get rid of him.
All right, so let's move on to discussing the rest of these games here. So perhaps the game of, I know technically we're in another year. Oh my God, Gary just reminded me that we're supposed to do that. Oops. Oh well. Hopefully, you know, they don't bother with it because I'm the one that uploads it. But I guess we might as well do it now, even though it's way into the podcast at this point. I'd like to remind everybody that Football's Football Podcast is is in partnership with LastWordOnSports.com. Of course, we get posted on their website, so always thank you for them for giving us promotion. They help us out. They have a great writing staff over there. You should check out the website and look at what, whether it's fantasy football, whether it's college football, whether it's NFL, those guys are on point over there. So, that being said, getting back to my point, this is perhaps, even though we are technically in 2016, this is still the same season, perhaps the game of the year happening right here between the Green Bay Packers visiting the Arizona Cardinals. My Lord, so much stuff going on. Carson Palmer, though, did not look like Carson Palmer in this game. Is that Green Bay defense, or is that Carson Palmer just being a little off? I mean,
And I'm really curious what Randy has to say about this, because I know he follows the Packers a little bit closer than I think either of us, because, you know, his girlfriend's a huge Packers fan, and we all know how it is with a significant other. You know, you usually end up doing everything they do, and I know he's closely tied to this team in a way, even though he's not his team. But I will say this. I think Carson Palmer's thumb definitely did have a significant part in this game. He made a lot of throws that we were like, oh, yeah, how in the world are you playing? But on the other hand, he did make some other throws that, hey, that's Carson Palmer. So he was about 50-50, if you ask me. He did a pretty good job of managing himself. It's just there were times we were really concerned. But I want to say this. I think the Packers' defense played very well in this game. I think that they did way better than I think I've seen them in a while. Earlier this year, they looked great. And they kind of fell off the map, and then in this game, they really looked motivated. I think they did. To me personally, at times, they were better than Arizona, if you ask me, because watching this game, I thought they did a great job pressuring Carson Palmer, whereas on the flip side, Arizona at times really just didn't do anything against Aaron Rodgers. It looked like Aaron Rodgers had an all-star offensive line at times.
Well, no, and he did. This is the first time his starting offensive line was there for one whole game.
Yeah, well. So. Go back. I said all-star. Those guys aren't all-stars. They're good. Those guys aren't all-stars. Let's be honest.
Some of them have been Pro Bowlers before.
They had. There's some of it. You know, we all know about Pro Bowls. Pro Bowls means nothing.
But still getting named to the team means something.
Okay. I mean, I'll name some guys later on probably that you'll be like, that guy got a Pro Bowl nomination? Wow, I'm embarrassed.
I think
anyway,
they've also – haven't they changed the way they do the voting?
Yes,
since,
it's
you know,
terrible.
Back in the day, I mean,
I'm sorry. The Pro Bowl doesn't matter. I think all three of us can agree with that. It doesn't. You can say what you want. We know who the good players are. My point being, let's get on the point. I just think that they did defensive line and offensive line for the Packers. Great job. Outplayed Arizona's offensive and defensive line in this game. So yes, I think Palmer's finger had something to do with this at times, but I have to give all the credit. I think the Packers' defense played a lot better.
Yeah, well, Randy, I mean, what did you think? You know, I'm sure you were watching. I was at work, and you were telling me everything that was happening in this game. But just obviously, you know, let's put the ending aside. We'll get that in its own context. But what did you think of just the game in general leading up to that?
Well, I thought the first three quarters were actually kind of boring. It was more only because I think all of us – I wasn't on the podcast last week, so I can't speak for you guys, but I felt like this was going to be the shootout of the weekend. Like, just both offenses were going to go crazy. I liked what I saw from Green Bay the week before, how they started figuring things out. And instead, it just seemed like both teams went all in on their defense and different packages and trying to control the ball and tried their best not to make it a shootout. I'm with Gary. I thought Green Bay's defense really did a great job of containing Arizona early and keeping them in the game while Aaron Rodgers and the Packers offense kind of try to find their footing, because just like against Washington, it took them a little while to get rolling a little bit, and you could see the frustration on Rodgers' face there in the first half, that it was like, it's like, here we go again. And just like against Washington, they start putting the pieces together and they get going. And we got the fourth quarter and overtime period that people are going to remember for a long time.
I mean, Palmer, you could see it out of the gate. He almost throws an interception on the first drive. And there was actually a couple of these that just were not caught by Packers defenders, where Palmer just threw, you know, bad passes. He had that one in the end zone, which was really bad. Rodgers also got lucky that they called illegal hands to the face because Patrick Peterson had a pick six on him. You know, so, I mean, like Randy said, it wasn't a great game, you know, in the first half, especially just kind of meandering, getting things down the field. You know, it was a 7-6 kind of game, or it was a 7-6 game, you know, and even then, when you start third quarter, interceptions again, like just, Lord, are either one of these quarterback's going to get anything going is what you kind of think. And just and then you have that dumb, like, I have no idea how the referees called that Richard Rodgers thing a catch. It is so clear that it hits the ground in real time. I don't just, people are, these referees, this was the only game I'll say, except for, you know, I think you can make a case like towards the end of the Broncos-Steelers game. This was the only game where I thought the referees kind of got involved a little bit too much because they did let them play a lot more because the playoffs and everything. But this is one where you had a lot more flags going on and it was just too much happening at that point. But
you bring up the Rodgers catch. I figure I better ask you two as Cowboys fans. Because the mini controversy that started up during this game was the Larry Fitzgerald catch, which then everyone kind of tried to say was a lot like the Dez Bryant no catch. And, you know, you had Green Bay challenge it, and they upheld the catch. What did you guys think? Do you remember this play? Do you think it was a catch? Or do you think it's a lot like the Dez Bryant one?
The one where he... Like, it looks like it might hit the ground, but it doesn't.
Well, it hits the ground, but they had called him a runner first. It's basically it turns and takes a couple steps while he's going to the ground. And
I think that one was of a clear... Dez is trying to make the catch the entire time. He's diving. Fitzgerald's already kind of moving forward. And then the ball comes out as he's falling down after he's already moved forward, you know, what they had already ruled. So, I don't know. I thought it was a clear, he caught it kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm a little bit right there with you, Sean. I kind of thought it was a little bit clearer, and I think that's why he got it. I think if he would have bobbled a little bit more, if it had been just a little bit more off, I think they would have definitely called it like they called the Dez, you know, a no catch. But I mean, the controversy was right there and you can kind of see it both ways in a way, but I think this is more clear.
I mean, guys, I don't understand why Bruce Arians decides, or the defensive coordinator decides, let's bring pressure to Aaron Rodgers when he has to throw a Hail Mary. I don't understand
The play before it worked, it threw him off, and I think that's what he was going with. I mean, the play before that touchdown, it looked like it was pretty successful, and he figured this formula was working.
He does get hit. I think right after he releases it, he gets hit. Mm-hmm. So the guy's just a little bit late, but still, I mean, and then you're – where are you defending? Why is there not a wall in front of – the goal line, you just, Jeff Janis is one person and he makes the catch in between two or three guys again. And it's like, what's going on? Did nobody watch the Lions game?
I think that's the thing, is he looked at the Lions game where they brought three guys that allowed Aaron Rodgers to roll to the right the way he wants to, set up and fire a shot, and then all of the Lions defenders end up behind the Packers defenders who create a wall so Rodgers can catch it. So I think I liked what Arians did. It didn't work, But I like that he brought, I think it was 6 or 7 guys at Aaron. Unfortunately, he was still able to get out of the pocket unscathed. It looked like they were going to be able to contain him. I wish they would have been able to create more of a bubble and keep him in the pocket, because I think that's really what you want to do on a Hail Mary situation, is keep the quarterback in the pocket and not let him really step into his throw. But they made him roll to his left, and they pressured him as he let go of the ball. Just Aaron puts it in the perfect spot. And even then, so now you have less guys in the end zone, but you have Patrick Peterson back there, who's one of the best corner covers or cover corners in the league back there. It just Janis makes one hell of a catch. And I mean,
he almost drops it. I mean, he has to hold it with his right arm and then bring it back up to his chest.
But I like the pressure. I liked something different. It's different than let's bring three, let them set up, and then we'll just have a jump ball situation. I liked, no, we're not going to let you set anything up. You're going to have to get rid of it sooner than you want, and then we're going to rely on our safeties and cornerbacks to make the play. It didn't work for them just because Aaron Rodgers is ridiculous sometimes, but I actually like that strategy more than the let's drop 8 or 9.
Man, what about that pass on, like, what are you doing passing on second down if you're Arizona on the previous drive? I mean,
The way I look at football, I'm not a mastermind of the game. I'm not never going to be like a head coach or anything, but I love the coaches that just go for it. He, like, unlike Andy Reid, that takes 6 minutes to go and just like, yeah, whatever, we'll do the onside kick and whatever. Bruce Arians goes, if we get a first down, we win the game. I'm going to rely on my offense to get that first down on this pass play. It doesn't work. They give the Packers some extra time. You have to remember, though, New England did the exact same thing against Kansas City with that tip pass that ends up getting the first down that ends the game. So if it's successful, they're kneeling it a couple times and they're just moving on, and everyone's saying, oh, what a gutsy call. It doesn't work, and you're going, why are you doing that? Just run the ball, and you're giving them too much time, which then the Packers almost screwed up when they go up to go spike the ball after the 4th-and-20 pass that goes 61 yards, and Aaron Rodgers decides, no, let's not spike it, let's run a play. And then there was a illegal motion in the middle of it and ran like 25 seconds off the clock. So the ending was definitely interesting, but I'm okay with the high-risk call to go, listen, we got here because of our passing game. Let's get the first down and win this game right now.
And it shows a lot of confidence in his players. That's what I like a lot. It shows that he has all the confidence in the world in Carson Palmer and that entire offense. And you see it in overtime. I really, really think that because I call overtime the Fitzgerald run. It was all about Fitzgerald, even the incomplete pass, and that to me shows that, hey, they have confidence in their guys, and they're going to force feed the guy because, well, guess what? They trust him, and they trust the quarterback that's giving the ball to these guys. So,
yeah, so, I mean, after not just this, but then we go into overtime, and Carson Palmer redeems himself because he goes to the right, throws across his body to the left, finds Fitzgerald wide open, and Fitzgerald just breaks tackles and keeps going 75 yards. I mean, just insane. And then they do a patented Fitzgerald play where you just shovel pass it in as he's going. They love to do a little slant where he's coming across too. This is a little different version of it, and Fitzgerald gets the touchdown for the Cardinals to go on. Is Fitzgerald the best story right now as far as you want him to win a ring the most?
I think it is to me. I think, honestly, the two best stories right now is Larry Fitzgerald getting that ring and Peyton Manning winning a Super Bowl and retiring. I think other than that, I mean, obviously Tom Brady and Belichick winning another Super Bowl just adds to that legacy, but I'm sure most of the world is tired of that. And there's nothing really on Carolina that makes it a great story. Like, I am a Cam Newton fan, so I would like to see him win a championship, but is that a good story? No, not really. Like, Larry Fitzgerald is, like, the epitome professional, and I will give him full credit there, so I would love to see him get a ring.
Yeah, I'm with Randy on that. And the two stories are Fitzgerald and Manning. And besides that, it's just there. It's fun little minor stories, but these major stories are the most important. And I think,
if the Panthers win, talk about the ego that Cam Newton will have next year. He's going to be celebrating after every single play.
He'll be the human bobblehead. Let's just say it that way.
And I'm going to laugh every single time.
Yeah.
I love it.
I just imagine this guy running around with a giant helmet.
Oh, God, but like, okay, so if Tom Brady wins another one, is he the greatest quarterback of all time?
He's close to it right now. I mean, what he's done this year with, I mean, everything around him falling apart. I mean, we've seen other teams this year completely sink with injuries, and here's Tom Brady and Bill Belichick going, we're on running back number 73 this season. We're using our third tight end as an offensive lineman at times. I look out at wide receivers that weren't even on the practice squad that are now starting. Just what Tom Brady and Bill Belichick do, as much as I don't like them because I'm a Jets fan and there's a rivalry there, I mean, you have to have full respect for what that team does.
You know, you look at the greatest quarterbacks of all time. I mean, you could look at many, many of them. Joe Montana, Johnny Unitas, the list goes on and on and on. But I mean, honestly, and I hate saying this too because I'm not a Tom Brady guy, you got to respect the talent. I was just having this conversation with somebody the other day about the Patriots and everything they've done since Belichick's been there and the Super Bowls they've won, even the Super Bowls they haven't. And it all goes back to one thing. Tom Brady is there, and Tom Brady is making things happen when nobody else is. You know, the whole team can transition. They can have various players, but it never changes. Tom Brady's always there. He's the centerpiece, and it means success. That speaks a lot for a quarterback, and to me, he's definitely in that list.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, to me, I know a lot of people are going to hate because of the Spygate and the Deflategate and all the other gates and whatever, but you win that many Super Bowls and it's you and the same coach. I mean, obviously it helps that you have continuity there and everything, but still, all the different players he's had to cycle through and he's still, and that team's still winning and still doing what they do. I mean, it's not that they've kept the same core guys all the time. You know, he's had offensive line problems this year. I mean, just it has not been a year of everything just happening for him. Certainly. So that being said here, I think you certainly have concerns about the Cardinals now, especially with we've always known that you can get to Carson Palmer. Teams have shown that. You can sack him. He can fumble even. But the fact that he was just throwing interceptions, and he could have had ridiculous amounts of interceptions in this game. I mean, I don't know how many times. I think I counted about 10 different times Green Bay Packers had their hands on the ball. I mean, just, you're going to play a Carolina Panther defense that we're about to talk about that's what they've done all year is win because they commit turnovers. They give their team a short field or they just give Cam Newton so many chances to do something that there's no way they can't score. I mean, what are you looking at for the Cardinals here?
Yeah, I have a lot of concerns, in looking at this picture because, you know, unless there's some kind of miraculous healing for Carson Palmer's thumb, I think it just spells trouble. I mean, they had a tough time against this Green Bay defense. Like I said, they played really well in this game. In fact, I think they played one of their best games all year here in this game. I just still think the Carolina's defense is probably that much better, even though they lost Jared Allen. I mean, that's a key piece to their defense because he was definitely helping them out. Did they have guys to replace him, guys that were there before he even joined the roster this year for the Carolinas? So I have a lot of fear for those, you know, Cardinals fans going into this game because I think they're going to set themselves for heartbreak because I have too many concerns of what I saw with that thumb. I just, it's gonna, something's gonna have to happen to prove me wrong.
Not only that, I mean, it seemed like their running game got stifled quite a bit, which is something the Panthers do well. If you can't get David Johnson moving, Randy, that obviously presents problem for Arizona, too. You know.
Yeah, I mean, if you can't get the running game going, then you become one-dimensional, and it definitely is going to help Carolina out. Or, hell, maybe the best thing for Arizona is if they go down 20 points at halftime and Carolina falls asleep again. I mean, that's kind of the best way to beat Carolina.
That's right been now. Carolina's MO for a lot of this year. People forget about that. The Colts almost beat them because of that, too. You know.
Yeah, Giants. So. Giants was the big one.
Yeah, Giants, too. Packers before as well. So, you know, that's a thing that Arizona defensively – they're really good. They are one of the top defenses. Obviously, they didn't rush. And that's one of the things, you know, Panthers have some studs on the offensive line that if they can keep Cam Newton clear, that's going to be an issue. You know, they're going to have to be able to get to him. And, you know, we know that they have good defenders. And, you know, Patrick Peterson and all that, but That's going to be an issue. You're going to have to be able to get to Cam Newton. You can't do that. You're going to have issues all day. So let's go on and talk about Carolina, who, if you just watched the second half, or not the second half, if you just watched the first half, you're like, what? How the hell did it go to this score, you know, at the end? Because Carolina was absolutely dominating in every single facet. And then, oh, the game changes. And then they do what they've done, where they let, you know, they start giving up the lead. They don't play well. You know, the other team starts doing what they do. You know, you got Russell Wilson, who again made crazy plays, where he's scrambling around and just throws it, and it's the guy catches it. And, I mean, so look, let's take it, you know, piece by piece here. So Carolina gets out to that 31-0 lead. Why do you think – what's the biggest reason why that happened?
I just think they came in with a better game plan than Seattle. Just all around. I mean, obviously you get Jonathan Stewart back with healthy legs. Yes, Marshawn Lynch comes back for Seattle and just wasn't the same, but Marshawn Lynch really hasn't been the same this whole year. But it was just like – You get that big run by Jonathan Stewart right off the bat, and like the confidence level for Carolina could not be higher. They're like, yes, we have this figured out. And then, you know, a couple of plays later, they're pounding it in for the end zone, into the touchdown, and all right, here we go. Now we need our defense to make a big stop, and they completely squash Lynch for a 3-yard loss. And then the very next play, they're hitting Russell Wilson as he's throwing it. Keekly intercepts it, scores a touchdown. And at that point, you're going, everything we're going to do from here on out is going to work. Like, confidence could not be any higher, and they just let it roll. Next time they get the ball, you know, they work their way down the field nice and slow, go ahead and get that other touchdown. And it's just, you could just kind of see Seattle, whether it was, I know the field was an issue, and you saw Seahawks players on the sidelines switching out cleats after every drive, trying to find something that worked, or if it was just, they got punched in the mouth, and it took them so long to be able to comprehend what was going on. It wasn't until, what, about 6 minutes left in the second quarter before you could kind of see the actual Seattle Seahawks show up and start pushing back. Obviously, I don't like them going for it on fourth down and instead of taking the 3 points there, which ends up kind of being a big deal, but it was just like any boxing match where two heavyweights go at it. Carolina punched him in the face really hard right off the bat, and it dazed Seattle for a while. And that's the best way I can explain it, because I sat there just thinking Carolina was going to win the game. That was my prediction, and going, I do not believe what I am seeing right now.
Yeah, you know what? You know, I was the same way. Because I'm watching this game and I'm thinking, wow, what's the point of even watching the second half? In fact, I'd put on 12 rounds 3 So Dean Ambrose is going to be way more impressive than what's going on in the Seahawks side of the ball.
So what's the main reason, Gary, you think that the Seahawks were able to come back in that second half?
Well, I mean, you guys just pointed it out. I mean, let's be honest, Carolina kind of tends to kind of fall asleep there in the second half, and I think they had a lot of confidence. They felt like, hey, you know, they've got a lot of ground to cover. We can stop them when we need to stop them, and I just think they, you know, kind of just ease their way back in this game, and the next thing you know, they kind of caught fire here. Carolina puts up a lot of pressure, and they put up a lot of good things on defense, but I really think that Russell Wilson, Carroll, they both got in the locker room. They kind of said, okay, we got to stick to our game plan. We got to figure out some of the things we got to change. I think they changed a few things, and they were ready, and they came back, and I think they – I just don't think that the Seahawks lack confidence themselves. Sure, they were down, but I just think that group of guys really believes in each other. One of the things is like we saw, you know, Cam Chancellor came back when he was in a bitter dispute about his contract, and he changed his heart because his players, his fellow teammates said, hey, man, we need you. We got to have you, and they stuck together. I think the Seahawks truly are a brotherhood, and I think those guys really stick together, and I think they did a good job fighting back here. I just think that Carolina just said, we got this thing. They almost didn't, but they had it in the end.
Yeah, I give full credit to Seattle. I think they definitely went into the locker room at halftime and went, do we really want to end this way? I mean, you go to back-to-back Super Bowls. You have a struggling first half of this year, fight all the way back to get to the playoffs, you know, have that crazy game against Minnesota, and then we're just going to lay down like this. And I'll give them full credit. They went out and played their hearts out. They made the changes they needed to. But the thing that drove me absolutely insane watching the second half was the lackluster just urgency of Carolina. Listen, you have this team up 31-0. You go in there to start the third quarter, and you step on their throat. You go down there, and you pass it around, and you make that drive, and you make it 38-0. Or it would be 38-7, because I think Seattle scored on their first drive. But still, you go, no, this is not happening. We're not going to even allow you to think like you're going to get in it. Instead, what I saw was a Carolina offense that were just like, how many minutes can we run off of this drive by just running the ball? Oh, we went 3 and out. We got a minute and a half off. That's okay. We're just taking time off the clock. And a Panthers. And
I wonder why Cam Newton doesn't step in and say, hey, we need to change it up here.
Well, he said that was all of them. It was just, I think they took the foot off the gas a little bit. And then as Seattle started making it get closer and closer, it went from, oh my God, we got to get our foot back on the gas. Where's the gas pedal? We don't know where it's at. Like, they started getting nervous instead of getting their composure and going, okay, let's finish this, which just drives me nuts why they even allowed that in the first place. Again, full credit to Seattle for, I mean, all of the adjustments they made. But I watched a Panther defense go from, you know, press coverage to we're going to lay back 8-9 yards back as he's hiking the ball because we don't want to get beat deep. Unfortunately, they're still getting beat deep because now they're not blitzing and it's giving Russell Wilson the time to throw the ball the way he wants, and just things started slipping away. I really wish Carolina would have came out in the second half going, starting over 0-0, same intensity right now. Let's bury these guys into the ground because this team is too good to allow them to come back into this game. Instead, we saw a really good Seattle team almost make a game of it.
And who do you blame for that, though? That's my question, because you got Pete Carroll on one side of the ball who is motivated, and I think he really, you know, is one of those kind of coaches that all game long he's talking to these guys. He's really trying to get in their head, hey, we need to do this, 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 this. Rivera, on this other hand, I was just sitting there thinking, did this guy not tell them, hey, we need two more touchdowns and this thing's a lock? Why didn't he? Did he not have the conversation? Is he not that type of coach? I can't figure that out. Because if I'm on the sidelines and I'm watching this happen, I'm in their faces. I'm like, guys, you didn't win this game yet. We still got, you know, 30 minutes left. You got to finish this game. Come on.
Yeah, and that's and that's the thing too. We talked about it. Like the other teams that almost beat them because of that. That they beat them because. Or didn't, but they got real close because they fell asleep. Or they didn't play as hard when they already got the lead or whatever. You know, it's just, you already know that coming in. You have that tendency. You got to do something to break that. You know, Luke Kuechly even said at the end of the game, you know, oh, we need to learn to finish games. Well, the way you learn to finish a game is just like Randy said. You get out there and you go, no, we are going to come out here and we're going to keep doing what we've been doing. We're not going to stop that. You know, just whatever. They played right into the hands of the Seahawks.
Yeah, and listen, I like how Cam Newton plays. I like how Lucy plays and how that whole team plays. You know, they're out there just having fun, having a good time. But that is the one downfall, is you get a lead like this and you let the fun times kind of take over. You lose focus. You go, oh, we got this. We're just going to have a good time. And I'm sure they were just listening to music in the locker room, just like, we're up 31-0. We got this, coach. Don't worry. It's like they don't have that veteran presence yet in Carolina to go, no, this is not how this is going to go.
Greg Olsen is fine. I will give Cam credit at the end there when he knew it was that final one. He went over there and pep-talked the defense like, all right, let's bring it home now. We let them get this far. You can't blow it. You
know? Yeah, but it's just, I want to see that in the third quarter. I don't want to see it middle of the fourth where you're going, okay, this is slipping, we got to do something now. It's going to be a learning process for this team. They have a lot of talent. I've talked to a lot of people and agree with them where Carolina has kind of built their team around what Seattle was a few years ago, but I actually think they almost have a bit more talent than what Seattle did, if they can keep it and they can keep it focused. And it's just getting that veteran leadership now and that experience to go, oh, we're up 31-0 at halftime, but that doesn't mean the game's over. Oh, okay, we'll do better.
Yeah, put those hamburgers down, guys. You got to finish this game.
So is that the only concern you have for the Panthers then? Is the whole, if they get it to a big lead, they might fall asleep? Nothing else?
Well, I also worry as they get farther on here that the pressure that they were feeling as Seattle was starting to breathe down their neck will start happening the whole game. How are they going to feel when they're one step away from the Super Bowl against Arizona? Are they going to feel the pressure? If they make it to the Super Bowl and say they're facing a Tom Brady, how much pressure is that two-week gap going to feel? Are they going to come out loose and which is why they play so well, is because they're so loose and they're having fun? Or are they going to go in there going, oh my God, this is a Super Bowl, and tighten up and try to be serious?
Yeah, Arizona presents its own issues because Seattle has a very dynamic offense. They have a Russell Wilson that can run around and make plays for you, very much like they have with Cam Newton. So they know what they get there. They didn't, you know, they bottled up Marshawn Lynch. You would expect that to happen with David Johnson as well. But I look at the firepower that Carson Palmer has to, he can throw it to any of those four guys, and I'm just talking about the main four, and they're going to make a play. You know, they're going to, I mean, look, you know, Russell Wilson kind of has that too. He has guys, maybe not with the same background as far as you kind of know their names a little better, but the Arizona offensive line show they can be vulnerable too. So, you know, it's just making sure that you don't do that whole falling asleep thing, because Arizona has the potential to, we're not going to play around here. We're going to do what you're not doing and stick it to you. And we can score points in a hurry. So, you know, who knows? But that game is going to be very interesting at 6:40 Eastern time on Sunday. But the final game, now we know, as Randy said, Manning, Brady Bowl number 19 of their careers. My goodness, so crazy that we're talking about that 19th time these guys have faced off. Broncos-Steelers was not a pretty game. I was doing the Ravel, and it was very defensive. Obviously, Big Ben missing Antonio Brown. They were still getting things going with Martavis Bryant and Toussaint, I think, had maybe his best game that he's had with D'Angelo Williams being out. But that Denver defense is no joke, and they were making Ben Roethlisberger feel it. But the worst thing is obviously Gary Peyton Manning. I mean, this is his first full game in a long while. He still kind of had I forgot about that. Yeah, don't let me forget, Randy, we got to talk about that little deal with Cam Newton here when we get done with this game. But yeah, so anyway, Gary, Peyton Manning, what did you think? Is it more about the drops for the receivers, or is it Peyton Manning?
You know, in this game, to me, I mean, I didn't see Manning, you know, be the Manning we saw earlier this year, throwing, you know, just weird ducks out there, inaccurate passes. To me, you know, it really does side more on these drop balls. It's just hard for me to believe that Manning did that bad of a job, because if you rewatch the tape, you watch the game, the balls are catchable. Everything was there.
Yeah, he's throwing them at the numbers. You know.
Yeah, at the numbers. So it's not that we're not seeing that. So you definitely got to blame the drops. And here's the thing, and I want to point this out. Demaryius Thomas, the guy that got paid
70 million.
He got the exact deal Dez Bryant got. Both these guys, now Dez Bryant was injured, but I still think that Dez Bryant wasn't even on his game.
And Demaryius Thomas, he was a ghost with Brock Osweiler. Osweiler didn't even throw to him most of the time.
You're exactly right. That $70 million must have weighed these guys down this year. Demaryius Thomas, and this is a very important game. If you're not going to play well all year long, you help your team in the playoffs, for God's sakes, and he did not at all. He later on in this game, he does help with a big catch, a conversion. But besides that, I mean, he really let them down. Even C.J. Anderson with a big drop. I mean, these guys just really did not help Manning. But, hey, you know, you got to give it to credit. The credit where credit's due, they got themselves in position to get on and to be successful. But, man, that's a big storyline in this game of the drops. They were just a big deal.
Yeah, and I think, you know, all credit to Pittsburgh for their defense, keeping them in it, you know, causing issues for Peyton Manning at times. Yes, the drops helped, but you're looking also at a defense that was – staying in there with those receivers and keeping the run bottled up for portions of the game. I think it's more about for what they had to deal with. It was credit to them. I think a lot of people were already saying, oh, Broncos are going to win this thing, blowout, and it wasn't that, you know. But the major factor for me when I was sitting there watching it going back was the fumble. The fumble changed everything because that changes. Now, granted, in the first half, Peyton Manning had two opportunities at around the 30, the Pittsburgh 30, where both times they had to kick field goals. And Brandon McManus had to kick a bunch of field goals in this game as well for Broncos. But, Randy, when you're looking at it, do you agree the fumble changed everything?
Yeah, absolutely. I really think, like you were saying, that Pittsburgh's defense was keeping them in this game. They kind of went in here going, listen, we're missing a lot of our weapons, so our mission is not to make the mistakes. Let's keep this low scoring. Let's keep this close, because obviously we're playing a very tough defense. So the thing we don't want to do is make that huge turnover. They wanted to keep it within a one possession game because they knew they weren't going to put up 30 points. I wanted to make sure, you know, Denver doesn't go crazy and get a bunch of points either. But their goal was not to make that big mistake, and they did. And that was the huge change in the game. And, I mean, you got to feel bad. But it's like at this point, and I talked about it earlier with Tom Brady, I'm still kind of surprised that they didn't just give up on the running game and go, okay, Big Ben, we're on your shoulders, because that's basically what the Patriots did against the Chiefs. Was, listen, our running game is so messed up. Now here we are in the playoffs, so we're on you, Tom. I wish they would have done that more with Ben, where they go, all right, let's go, especially this late in the game. We're relying on you to get us this last drive.
And you know, look, Pittsburgh, they fought the good fight, but, you know, the Broncos move on here. All I heard after the game, and I was one of the ones after, you know, doing that game and it being over, I'm going, there's no way the Broncos play anything like this next week that they're beating New England. Do you still feel that way, or do you feel like, you know, we are talking about the best defense in the NFL, they can bother Tom Brady, and he doesn't have the fluid game that he had against the Chiefs, and maybe Peyton Manning gets them to catch some of these balls that they didn't catch, and we're talking about a different team? They are at home, too, which makes a difference, because when Peyton Manning goes to Foxborough, that's when, you know, the crap hits the fan, so they say. What are you guys thinking right now before we even get into this week and all that stuff?
I mean, I already went into this weekend feeling, especially seeing how Pittsburgh was just torn up with injuries, that I felt that the Kansas City-New England game was the AFC Championship game. I felt those were the two most complete teams in the AFC right now. And now that you have New England healthy and getting stronger, and Denver still trying to get any kind of rhythm, any kind of being on the same page at all, I can't see Denver doing it.
You know, I don't know. I almost want to save my prediction, because I think we're doing a show Thursday. So, I want to say this. I think there's 2 points that the Broncos need to have on key and be ready to have to win a game against the New England Patriots this year. Randy just pointed one of them out. We talked about it earlier. Defense has got to get to Manning. To Brady, and Brady has to be rushed enough that he cannot get the ball out quickly. That's the dangerous part. Brady gets the ball out very quickly, and his guys are very accurate. They know where to be, how to be there, and their timing is very good. So that's going to be a big test for the Broncos, but they've got to get there to Brady, really give him a hard time. Second thing, they've got to have the running game working. It's got to be on fire. It's got to be ready, because that's another way you can affect this New England Patriots team. I just don't know if Manning by himself is going to beat the Patriots. I just don't see that because these receivers, sure, they have some good names, but they haven't been as great as those names have been on the back of their jerseys. And I just don't know if I'm going to buy that Manning by himself can do it.
And let's not forget, that game Brock Osweiler beat Brady, that's when Gronk went out during the game. He didn't have Edelman. He was having to throw long passes to Brandon LaFell. I mean, that was talk about bottom of the barrel at that point. And they still made it as close as they did. So, you know, that's what scares you if you're the Broncos. You try to go back and watch that game and you go, oh my God, how do you stop this? You know? Mm-hmm. But yeah, let's see. Let's wait till Thursday. I mean, that really puts a wrench in, you know, Gary and I's predictions, certainly, because, you know, we had said Broncos, and it's just like, wow, after this weekend, I don't know that I have too much confidence in either of our Super Bowl choices there, Gary.
I know. It's terrible.
It's going to be I'm like, oh no, here we go. It's going to be rematch 2003 again. I felt it when I got done with that weekend. I was like, oh, we're going to get Carolina and New England again. That's what this looks like. But who knows? Maybe let's see until we get to Thursday, see if anybody's mind changes. But, Randy, you wanted to go on this big rant about this thing with Cam Newton and the 12th man flag. You know, people like me that haven't seen this, explain what happened. And then, of course, go ahead and say
what's going on. What definitely makes me laugh, because I brought it up to you, Sean, and I mentioned it to Gary right before we got started, and neither of you heard about it. I listened to ESPN podcasts and looked up different things. Nobody is bringing up any kind of a hissy fit. But I tell you what, my Facebook exploded on Sunday after this video surfaced of basically it looks like a 12th man flag is getting tossed to Cam Newton while he's doing his little victory lap from a fan, and he grabs it and kind of crumples it up and just throws it away, kind of smiles and laughs, and off he goes. And Seattle Nation went ridiculous.
Yeah, isn't this just like that fan that was trying to sue him for $500 because he ripped up his sign that
he
made?
To me, this is even less than that, because he didn't even do anything. Like, he didn't take it from somebody. It was tossed down. And I just do not understand Seattle fans, and I have tried to talk to some of them on Facebook and when I was at work today about why it's such a big deal, and they're all, it's disrespectful. Why? I mean, it's a 12th man flag for a football team. It's not the end of the world. And to me, listen, it was tossed down to Cam Newton during a victory celebration. What did you want him to do? Hug and kiss the flag and say, I love Seattle? Of course not. He's at home in front of his fans in Carolina. He's going to toss it up. He's going to play to the crowd and throw it away.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's like the people that get mad if you know, like the whole thing in baseball, certain stadiums, you throw, if an opposite team hits a home run, you throw it back.
Yeah.
Like, somebody gets mad about that.
The thing that makes it just drives me up the wall is I've been thinking about it all day, because it was just, again, it's been all over my Facebook from just several different sources posting different stuff. Could you imagine if it was the Carolina mascot that did that? Oh, not even Seattle Nation would have cared.
I think they do care a little bit, but yes, it's obviously inflamed because of Cam.
But that's what you see at every game you go to, is the mascot is going to make fun of the other team, right? However way they want to do it. Tackling a guy that has the other team's jersey on, or just goofing around like that. That's what they do. And it got so far that this thing has just went around social media in the Northwest, at least, I guess. But some lady named Sarah wrote a letter to Cam Newton calling him classless and how they bleed blue and green, and how Seattle and their fans are the real winners, and all this stuff. It's like, listen, I hate to burst everybody's bubble here. Like, we love football. We love sports. That's why we do this podcast, because we love to talk about it. We're passionate, just like every other fan base is out there. But you have to remember, it was like, you're not part of the Seattle Seahawks.
Yeah.
They want you to feel that way because they want your money.
It's true.
The 12th man thing was borrowed from Texas A&M because they figured they could get the fan base riled around them more, and they can sell all these 12th man flags, and you know, they could create this whole revenue stream. It wasn't to make this whole community, I'm sorry to say, but I mean, you have to understand, the NFL is a business.
Yeah. That's why their whole slogan this year has been football is family.
So for why? Them to, for, I mean, I get it. I'm a fan too. Like, I sat in my chair for 10 minutes staring at the screen after Fitzpatrick threw his third interception and the Jets were eliminated from the playoffs. I get the passion. I'm not saying that and going on a little rant about how you feel bad about them losing. That's all well and good. And if you don't like Cam Newton, I get it. He's flamboyant. He can look egotistical at times. I like those kind of players. I would rather see a player like a T.O. or a Cam Newton smile and have a good time in front of a camera than have scuffles between Pittsburgh and Cincinnati.
But that's just normal. Like, you know, we had both ends of the spectrum with that. I was at the game where Terrell Owens stood on the star, and then I watched George Teague whack him off it too.
There are times where it's too far, of course.
But it's still the same thing. Like, really, it's disrespectful, okay? But at the end of the day, he's being a heel, and I don't have a problem with it. And then when Terrell Owens was on our team, I was all about Terrell Owens. Hey, throw me the popcorn, do all that. And so that's what they do. Well, actually, I think we're missing those players more.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Cam Newton taking the signs off of the thing, sure, that's him playing heel. But I'm talking about if he gets a first down and he just gets that big smile on his face and points first down, that's him having fun. I don't see that as him showing up the other team as it was where T.O. is standing on the star. That's straight up showing up their team. It was just, to me, it was just so mind-boggling to see these people. Like, I don't know this Sarah person, and she may have, but did she send this letter out to every single person we saw step on the American flag over the last few years? Like, I understand that being a big issue. Somebody stepping on a 12th man flag or tossing it aside, who cares? It's football. Have fun. I'm sorry your team lost. My team's worse than yours. I mean, at least Seattle Seahawks fans got a reminder of what it's like to be a New York Jets fan for the first half of that game and completely get blown out. All right? But just remember, it's a game. That's what I keep trying to tell people when they go get mad at Cam Newton. It's a game. He's having fun. It's a game based around a business.
How do you feel about this, Gary? Like, I am, for one of these people that I think that the NFL stupid to take away. Now, I think the stuff like the Joe Horn with the cell phone thing, that's a little bit, like, much. But, like, having the – because that's what I love about soccer. Like, when they score and they all get around each other and they do stupid, dumb things that you only do when they score because they don't score all the time. Like, I miss the stuff with the Rams where they all got together and did a taunt and whatever. Those are fun things that you get to watch.
Or the old, Dirty Bird dance where all the
– what's wrong with that? Oh, yeah, it's insulting to the other team. But guess what? Maybe you should, you know, score.
Yeah,
I'm with you.
I totally agree. I've always been on the side of, you know, I don't have a problem with the celebrations in the end zone. Yes, it hurts. It's when your team is the one being scored on. But when you are not in the fight and you're watching, you know, like all of us are, none of us are Rams fans and none of us are Raiders fans. When the Raiders and Rams are fighting, you know, and they're doing their dances in the end zone, we're loving it. It's something I want to tune in more. I want to see those highlights. I want to see everything about it because it's exciting. To me, NFL's losing money because they're stopping that stuff. Sure, it's going to hurt somebody's feelings, but come on. You know, you just pointed out the fact that, you know, crumpling up a Seattle Seahawks flag and throwing it in the trash, no one died for the Seattle Seahawks. No one had to go to war. No one had it. That's not a flag that we should be worried about. Now, if you're talking about the French flag, the American flag, the Russian flag, those people, there was blood shed for that. That matters. Things like this, it's just silly. I mean, even Sean, you talked about Terrell Owens. Yes, that whole thing on the star. At the time, I was ticked. I was angry. I'm a Cowboys fan. Why wouldn't I be? But at the same point, looking at it, growing up a little bit, understanding it, I'm like, you know what? It's a star. It's all it is. It's great. I love the organization, but he's on a star. Big deal. I think people blow things out of proportion. We're already a PC society. It's just bringing it into our sports. Come on, let's calm down with that. This is entertainment. There's a reason we pay.
Robert Hagen wants us to. We can't forget the sack dance from Ray Lewis.
Oh yes!
Celebrations.
That was the best.
I call it the 187.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I understand the league in a way does it because it's like, oh, the gang mentality, and we don't want to promote stuff like that. And think about the kids; they're going to think that that's okay to do. But it's just like, come on,
yeah.
Like that's again that's where it comes down to. Why aren't the parents telling them that that's not okay to do? You know, just why does everything have to be toned down so that you as a, and we're all parents here, so that you as a parent don't have to do anything? It's just are these kids like not smart enough to think for themselves?
Only that. I mean, we go back to the PC thing. You know, there's a reason Pop Warner, they don't want him to do certain things. They probably don't like celebrations. I don't have a kid in Pop Warner, so I don't know all the rules. But there are things in place to make sure all the teams feel welcome. Everybody feels like they've had a great game. That's not reality. That's not the real world. We honestly need sports to teach our kids sometimes that, hey, this is what life is like. You know, remember that time you watched that other
team score four touchdowns on you. Sometimes when you go to work, you're going to have five people yell at you, and you're going to go home not feeling good. It happens. But guess what? The next game you play, you may be scoring the four touchdowns. You may be getting the raise in your job in the future. Mm-hmm. That's what life is like.
Don't get me started on participation awards. But I'll just end this on one thing. I cannot wait now. I looked it up. 2016 Carolina Panthers opponents. Carolina is going to Seattle next year.
Oh, man.
I can't wait. I mean, usually, say Carolina wins the Super Bowl, usually they will play that first Thursday game at home. But I hope it is like one of those first Monday night game of the year or something. Just let's get right to it. It'd be great.
You got to go, Randy. You have to go to that game.
Yeah.
I'm tempted to find a way to say
you
got to
give us a report of how that went.
So, we should all just go.
Hey, why not? That's like one of those events, you know.
So much fun.
Listen, I'm a skinny, weak nerd. Me crumpling up a 12th man flag in the stadium might not be the best idea.
Yeah, you're not making it back home. Talk true. About like, you know, those Green Street hooligans thing. That's going to happen to you before you get out of the stadium.
And I do have to point out, obviously I went on the rant because it was all over my Facebook. This is not all Seattle fans, and I have to bring the point. Robert and I have gone to two Seattle games over the last few years. We went and saw them destroy the Baltimore Ravens and watched them destroy my New York Jets. And I will say that for the most part, most Seattle fans are just like everywhere else. Most of them are good. Most of them understand. I remember most of our time in both of those games was a lot of friendly trash talking where you're making fun of each other, but with a smile on your face and knowing it doesn't mean anything at the end of the day and having a good time. So I don't want to run down all of the Seahawks fans saying they're the worst fans in the world. It's just, I live in the Pacific Northwest. I get to see both sides. And it was that side that just, it made me laugh because it blew up my Facebook and looked like it was going to be this huge deal. And then you wake up Monday morning and you look at the rest of the country and the rest of the country goes, well, let's talk about these games. I mean, nothing ever happened to the rest of the country. So,
yeah, because it's only Northwest. It's a nothing. Thing. Hey, at least it's not as bad as, you know, like the Seattle Sounders fans where they are just all uppity and, you know, think they're the best thing ever because they get the most sellouts and stuff and act all Euro snobby. That is a different kind of fan than the Seahawks fans. So, that being said, even though we kind of turned this into just a topic here at the end, that's pretty much it for this podcast. We'll be back on Thursday previewing the two conference championship games, and I'm sure there'll be some kind of news or whatever to talk about, even though all the head coaching positions are filled now. But I'm sure something will get out there that'll have us talking. But all right, until Thursday, of course, if you enjoyed what you heard here, go rate, review, subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher and wherever else there are whatever your favorite podcasting is, you can subscribe there. And, of course, you know, listen to everything that's on the WTM Network now. Of course, now Randy's podcast is on there. And, you know, Randy, I mean, I don't know offhand what your next scheduled, what y'all are talking about on your next show, but let people know.
Yeah, actually, our next one will come out today where we talked about Bubble Bobble and our experiences playing our first game together for the project. And I talk about an indie game called Thomas Was Alone, which is an interesting puzzle game. And Wes goes through the crazy Japanese pop world that was Final Fantasy X2.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. But I just want to just take a moment real quick and try to reach out to everyone here. It's not for a little while, but Wes and I are setting up a thing with the Backlog Busting Project at the beginning of March. If you want more information, check out our Facebook page or backlogbusting.com. where he and I are setting up a 24-hour live stream where we're going to try to raise money for the Extra Life charity and the Children's Miracle Network. So definitely more details are going to come over the next few weeks, but we're really excited to get this thing going.
Yeah, that's an awesome cause, and I definitely think anybody should go out there and support that, supporting Extra Life and the Children's Miracle Network. Well, that'll do it here for us. Check us out on Thursday night, Friday morning with those previews for the conference title games. And until then, see you later, everybody.
You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.